Sunusha Naidu, Senior Research Associate at the Institute for Global Dialogue. A very good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm well, Howard. How are you doing?
I am doing well, thank you. So what do we know about the resignation of Job Mokgoro?
Okay, it's been one of those messy affairs. One of those messy affairs where Mr. Mokgoro had been put in, I think, as an interim kind of premier. He was asked to step in following the former premier who had resigned. And, of course, there was the whole controversy around the interim provincial committee and their relationship to the mother body of the Thuli House. And so if you go back to 2017 and you just go back to that period where the former premier, and I can't say his surname properly, so I don't want to disrespect him, but they couldn't actually vote at the elective conference. There was all these court cases pending. And of course, then that whole province was left in limbo. The politics of that province was kind of in a very debilitating state in terms of the ANC branches and the IPC and so forth. And of course, Job Mokgoro comes in, I think, in 2018 to try and stabilize the province. But it's also now these different alliances that play out in the province. So there are reports that Mokgoro was essentially an ally of the former premier, that as much as he served and he was given the task to try and stabilize not just the politics of the province, but also in terms of some of the challenges from a developmental perspective, he was arguing, and before he tendered his resignation yesterday morning, his argument was that a lot was happening without him being asked to provide his story about what was going on in the province. And more importantly, his argument was they gave him a province that was heavily in crisis, not just politically, but from a developmental perspective. And then they were basically using that. And then when I say they, I'm talking about the Thuli House, and I'm talking about the IPC and so forth. That essentially that was used as the kind of a stick to say, you haven't done anything to improve the province from a governance perspective. There's still crises. There's still socioeconomic crises. There's still questions of municipalities that are in deficit and so forth. So he supposedly, according to a Mail and Guardian article that I read, he had met with the Deputy Secretary General of the party, Jessie Duarte, explaining to her and telling her that this was just not on, that at the end of the day, you all had meetings and you'll never ask me to come and present my side. And so this has been the tussle. And it covers so many different angles, I think, that is a replica of how the ANC is fighting these different battlegrounds in the provinces around the election candidate list. And we saw yesterday that the Deputy Secretary General said that they're going to go to the electoral court to have the candidate list reopened for submission to the IEC for the local government elections. So I think all of this is a combination of these challenges that we find that the party is basically dealing with and has back against the wall around.
So are you saying that he actually could have been a very good person to continue, but he was almost outside of the circle?
You know, it's quite interesting because when you read the story, and it's such a messy story, by the way, Howard, that it's difficult to not get caught up or entangled in the party factionalism battleground and battle line. So the argument is that he says they gave him, I mean, his argument is that he had to deal with so many different challenges, not just challenges between the provincial structure of the party versus the Thuli House, but it's also the fact that municipalities under his jurisdiction were in such a parlous state, both in terms of financial resources and delivery, that he's arguing that he turned it around in particular ways. For example, he talks about that he had intervened and he had managed to address the pit toilet crisis, the latrines, and so forth. But he said it was such a poisonous chalice. I mean, that's my word. Poisonous chalice that he received in order to turn
it's
around.
So interesting.
And those are the issues that he's raising. But then the other underlying current in all of this, and that comes in now with regards to this party factionalism politics, is he's been seen as an ally of the previous former premier. The person that's coming into replacing, again, is somebody that may not necessarily be an ally of Cyril Ramaphosa, and that's just my interpretation, but is somebody that could be important for next year's elective conference. So the question then becomes, how is Lithuli House, and how is this process being effected on the ground? Is it really about, and I'm not saying that what's going on with Mr. Mukhura and others is not about, factionalism, politics, whatever. But the problem here is, what is the intention for next year? Are you cleaning house so that you want to secure the second term? And that seems to be the impression that some media reports are giving. But it's such a messy affair.
Well, let me give you my take on it. And I was, without having too much knowledge about this, the clue was given to me by this sentence, and I'd love your response to it. This is what he said. The opportunity to serve the people of Northwest would not have arisen if it were not for the ANC and the party that I serve. My gratitude is directed, therefore, to the ANC, to collective leadership headed by President Cyril Ramaphosa. The collective leadership, to me, headed by Cyril Ramaphosa, means that he doesn't particularly see the president as his leader, but generally it's the ANC collective who might have Cyril Ramaphosa at its head. So to me, without knowing that background, I understood this to mean that he isn't a follower of the, or supporter of the current president, but rather of this older notion of the ANC collective leadership. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that has been the to and fro with regard to this whole saga. Questions have been raised about whether or not, the challenge would have been, to what extent is this collective leadership representing the kind of collective leadership of old? It includes possibly the suspended Secretary General Ace Magashule. It includes those kinds of different dynamics. So yes, I think that cleaning up house is quite a big task for Lithuli House and for the executive of the party, particularly because you have left, I mean, what you're seeing at the grassroots, what you're seeing in the candidate list compilation, and also in terms of some of the provinces, is that there's definitely a reaction, a kind of cleavage around whether or not you're going to accept who's going to be put on the party. For the longest time ever, this has been the biggest crisis of the party in terms of what happens at the grassroots. Because remember, for some of the more ordinary councillors that want to be on the party list, it's a job for them. For the bigger end of the, at the other end of the spectrum, for those that are, have this political career path, it's basically to see how they continue in their relationship in these different lines and these different contexts and different divisions in the party in terms of alignment. So I think your point that you raised in terms of, what do you make of that impression of the collective leadership? The collective leadership is actually saying something of this nature, that the president is not the only leadership in the party, that the president does not have the complete control. It is a collective decision. And there's always been that kind of, nobody is above the party. We speak in a collective tone, a collective voice. That has always been the ANC's Trump line, although we know it hasn't always played out in practice.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at the situation with Jacob Zuma and Ace Magashule. It certainly hasn't. They haven't accepted the collective at all.
So I completely think that what you're seeing here is that pushback by provinces, the pushback by those that have been in the provinces to try and stabilize, and where they feel as if that their factional groups or groupings have now need to be reinforced. So it's the biggest challenge the party is going through. And it's an existential challenge. How the party purges itself, how it gets through this, is going to be very important. And I'm not sure whether the party can absorb all of these challenges, because when you look at the list that were compiled in terms of submission for the IEC, a lot of, I mean, you could see at Mthuli House, you could see at one or two of the protests, that people were feeling as if this cleanup or this kind of trying to rebalance, re-correct the party is not going in the way that you're trying to create level of stability, semblance, and some morality, some ethics. People are really at the grassroots feeling as if they're being squeezed. And that's going to be the biggest challenge for me in the local government election, and also how this plays out in terms of the elective conference next year.